think, like, if people want to point to a flaw in losing Allen and getting Kinlaw, from a business of football standpoint, you got younger and cheaper.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. John, it turned 30 in January. Now, listen, John's not old. John's going to help in Minnesota. He's a good player. He deserves the money he got. I like John. This is in no way trying to slight John, okay? Kinlaw's a little bit bigger, taller, certainly, a little bit younger. He'll turn 28 this fall. John just turned 30. And a little bit cheaper. Now, if you want to ask, I think there's a fair question in, damn, they doubled Kinlaw's salary. Kinlaw's making a lot more now than probably his production would guarantee. But if you look at what he's making in relation to the entire NFL,
he's way down.
I mean, he's not top 20.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can count that far down.
I just think what happens is,
now, Grady Jarrett's making a hair less than him. Grady Jarrett's also significantly older. Cam Hayward is making a hair less than him, but he's also older. Like,
did Jared sign that contract when the salary cap was much lower?
No, Jared was released. Jared just signed a new deal, but he's also 32.
How much is he making right now?
14.5.
So, but I'm saying his deal, most of these deals that were signed at a certain point. And that's why when they start coming through.
Jared signed yesterday.
I'm not worried about Jared. Yeah. I'm talking about when you start looking at a lot of the deals, the salary cap is now 280-something million. Yeah. It was what, 4 or 5 years ago? And a lot of times people see when somebody is making and they're like, oh, I can't believe they're making it because that's what the salary, that's what it produces at this moment.
Where I land on this is you can argue they overpaid for Kinlaw based on production. And I'm not going to fight you on that. But where Kinlaw ranks and where he will rank by the end of the week, especially you're going to see some restructures, there's going to be a lot of things that happen, is probably the third tier down. Because the top tier of interior defensive linemen are going to... Chris Jones got 32 last year. I don't think anybody's getting that. I think the top tier we've seen in free agency is probably Milton Williams getting 26.
Mm-hmm.
I think anything north of 25 for interior D linemen is going to be top tier. Yeah. And maybe that obviously will continue to grow. But like, there's not some super... D-tackle free agent sitting out there that's about to reset the market.
Mm-hmm.
Anything north of 25, maybe that the new baseline becomes Williams at 26, or maybe it becomes 28, maybe it becomes 30, right? But for just talking sake, north of 25 is tier one. That is the creme de la creme.
Mm-hmm.
20 to 25 is going to become tier two. John just cracked that. John got 20 a year from the Vikings. Really, 15 to 20 is going to be your tier three D lineman. And 15 is the bottom of it. So what they're telling you from a salary standpoint is they probably got a tier three player that they think can perform at a tier two level.
People
like the money, you got to reframe how you think about the money with the cap exploding is what I'm trying to explain.
The people are always going to look at it because they look at what they make and what the people making, and it's always too much. But the ultimate thing is they're trying to compare John directly to Kinlaw, and that's not what this deal is. This deal was, get somebody at that position where we can get other people at other positions. And they did not feel that John was still producing at the level he was being paid. That's it. You know, it's not a player for player trade out. You know what I mean? I'm going to bring this dude in. He's younger. He's going to make less money. And we're going to also be able to improve other positions.
I think Johnny Newton is a huge factor in the Javon Kinlaw decision. I think they see a bigger role for Newton. And I think with Allen there, it's harder for Newton to have a larger role. I think the other part of this, I mean, if we're just going to be totally honest, John wasn't going to, at least John didn't want to play this year with no guarantees on his deal, which his old deal that he had with Washington had no guarantees on it. Now, the guarantees are minimal this year. It's 125, but he got a big old bonus to sign in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He now has $31 million guaranteed, 24 of it guaranteed yesterday when he signed his deal. There's a math equation to this, too. And when the Chiefs did this, when they trade Tooney? Last week? Right?
Yeah,
I think
a week before that.
The Chiefs trade away Joe Tooney. Now, granted, he's a couple years older, but he's also been a way better player than any of the people we're talking about. The Chiefs traded him away for a fourth. And people are like, damn, what is Kansas City doing? This dude's won four Super Bowls. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. He's been really good. Trading him away for a fourth. Some of this is simple math, dude. You are looking at Joe Tooney, who's going to be 33 this fall, and you know you're going to have to pay him, and you don't want to. And you're trying to recalibrate on the fly. I think good teams try to stay ahead of the cap, and I think that's what Washington was trying to do in this decision-making process. I'm not guaranteeing it's going to work, mm-hmm. but I think you're overly simplifying, and you're jumping to a conclusion when you're like, Allen's better than Kinlaw, what the hell? So I'm just trying to provide the context of what I think is important.
That statement may be true, but then they may be asking the question, is Allen worth the money we were going to pay, what he was expecting to get paid? Maybe that's no in their face, in their mindset. And I think ultimately it comes down to what their mindset is. The people that's paying, that's, they get that decision. They're going to say, does the guy's play match what he's expecting to get paid or getting paid? And off of that, they're going to make their decisions. And when they decide to move on, that's normally it. Has nothing to do with Kinlaw. It's about you're not producing at the amount of money you're making. He wasn't going to sit and take a cut.
On his cap number this year, Kinlaw is slated for about 7.5 against the cap. Johnny Newton slated for about 2.5. Call it 10 between the two of them. Now, we understand Peters doesn't care necessarily about the cap numbers. He cares about the cash going out. Fine. It's still going to be significantly less cash going out than Allen's going to take in year one for both of those players. And I think there is a belief that both of those players will equate to something greater than what Allen's going to give you.
Yeah.
The lost part in this is, now, I don't know that John made any public comments, and I'm not trying to assert that he did, about wanting a new deal, not going to play without guarantees, but I have a feeling that that would have come up by the time we got to July or August. So some of this is just trying, like they said, they want to do right by John. He wanted guarantees, the marketplace with Barrett. Go get it.
Yeah.
Then there's a conversation I was thinking more and more. That's kind of been the biggest free agent deal, right? You lose Jeremy Chinn, you bring in Will Harris. To me, that's another money thing. Chinn was really good last year.
Yeah.
And it's entirely possible he replicates that level of play. But it's not like he was a perfect player, somebody that mandated you bring him back. And over the course of his career, for 4 years in Carolina before he signed here, he was excellent as a rookie. I think he came in second in defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah.
It was a steady downward progression from there. Carolina was also a train wreck. So I don't put much of that on Jeremy.
Totally.
But he's getting paid off the best production of his career. That's what got him paid by the Raiders. Will Harris, we're going to talk to Matt Paris a little later, old friend of the program, and we'll get the word on Harris. But what I can say about Harris, just in what I've watched and what I've talked to people about, what DQ talks about, what Joe Witt talks about, nose for the ball and arrive violently. Mm-hmm. And that's how that dude plays. And again, it's a math equation. He is older, but significantly cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how you arrive at that determination. But there's a bigger picture thing that I think deserves to be discussed kind of at length. And they've made three big trades in the last year. No, not even the last year, the last, hell, 8 calendar months?
Last 2 months.
Since, we'll call it November 1 to today is what, mid-March?
Yeah.
5 months.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lattimore, Deebo Samuel, Laremy Tunsil. These are three veteran players. Three veteran players with all pros on their belt. Three veteran players that have played in big moments with name value. Their jerseys have been sold at team stores. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are established players. It's my understanding. Now, this could change, right? But I, after speaking with sources on this, and hell, we've already seen it with Lattimore at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They are not. Yes, they traded for all of them. I think the only compensation you could argue was possibly too high is Lattimore, and that would be based on last year's production that wasn't great for his standards, but I think he was still hurt. I think Debo, you got for a song. Tunsil, I think the compensation is in your favor should he deliver. Now, I think it's really, really important to point out you traded for veteran, established players, good players, all going into years on their contract or contracts, period, that are under market value for their position.
Yeah.
And the message, the signals from Ashburn are play on this and then we'll figure it out. Show me and then we will figure this out. That's not to say there's no, like, Tunsil's got 10 mil guaranteed coming his way. Debo has a big roster bonus coming his way. Lattimore doesn't. But still, if you're Debo Samuel, Brian, and you look at wide receivers, I believe Darius Slayton just got 12 mil a year.
Mm-hmm.
Debo's is slated to get a $14.5 million roster bonus, I believe. So I don't want to poo-poo that money because it's a lot of money. But Darius Slayton just got 12 mil a year. Debo, if he's a straight-up free agent, the number is higher. Yeah. Tutu Atwell got 10. Deami Brown got 10.
Yeah.
Debo, even coming off a season where he only went for 800 from scrimmage, he's 2 years removed from 1,209 touchdowns. Debo, there's big money available for a guy like that. And then you flip it over to Tunsil. And we're going to have some Tunsil conversations. He seems like an interesting character that I can't wait to get to know. But if you want to talk the tackle position, the money at tackle, Tunsil's technically making 25 mil, but only 10 mil guaranteed this year. Darisaw with the Vikings, Andrew Thomas, like the money he's going to be looking for when that comes up, it's going to be big. Talking about the salary cap going up, I think there is real value in the Commander's front office saying, guys, we love you. We traded for you. You're here. We absolutely will take care of you. Let's see it on the field.
Yeah.
I think you get highly motivated players in those instances.
But if they, hopefully. I think the guys just look at what the other guys are getting, that motivates them right there. And they know they got to go out and produce. If I produce, they look at the people signing deals and go, that's my next stop. So it's a good motivational tool. But you got better players too also coming into your roster. Helps your team out.
I think Debo and Tunsil, zero debate. Lattimore, you hope, is fully healthy, and then you get a real assessment of where he's at. Because if he's fully healthy and the play looks like it did last year, you got a problem. If he's fully healthy and he's back to just being a dog shutdown corner, you got away with one, man. And it's a big, big change. Now we'll have to see what happens. Maybe Tunsil and his representation are already talking about a new deal. We'll find that part out. Now, if you're wondering why we're cranking Bone Thugs, Jeff and I were brainstorming what music we needed to bring London Fletcher in, and we thought
something from Ohio, baby.
London, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. I will say this. This is the first time I've ever been brought into the Thuggers Ruggish Bone, but I like it, man. That takes me back to my roots.
That's the way you play ball, dog.
I thought you'd like it, man.
Oh, yeah. I play golf like that, too, sometimes, B. You know.
Well, I know you don't stop talking the whole damn round.
Unfortunately, I know, yeah.
And if you come out on the right side, you'll stop talking till you see him again.
I'm going to talk what I lose or win, so that's the thing.
So, Fletch, let's talk about, it's been a really busy couple days now for Washington, going back to kind of the first trade for Debo, then the trade for Tunsil, some subsequent moves. But let's start with Debo. What do you think of that move? What do you think he brings to Washington?
Yeah, I really like the move of adding Debo. You look at our offense from a year ago and you say, hey, what do we need? We needed more playmakers, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Was always constantly looking for a true, consistent number two receiver. But I think with Debo, he's more than just a receiver. You saw how San Francisco utilized him, doing different things, using him as a runner back at times. Obviously, as a receiver outside, he can play the slot. You can do jet sweeps with him. He's a playmaker, and you just want to get the ball into his hands. You want to have more weapons, more playmakers at the disposal of Jaden Daniels. And let's see what this offense can do. You also will look at another guy that offense defenses have to pay attention to. You can't just say, hey, we're going to roll coverage over Terry and not really worry about the other guys, force them to beat us. That's a guy that you have to truly game plan for from a defensive standpoint. And he brings some toughness to the football team.
Yep.
That physicality, that toughness, his mindset, it cannot be overstated. When you want to be a physical football team, you need to have physical type of guys. And it's rare that you have receivers that bring that physicality. He's one of the most physical players in the National Football League.
I'm wearing flannels all year, Fletch. Big Debo.
Yeah.
And look, but though, I'm supposed to be doing this thing with Maddie on Monday, and she was asking me to let her know what I thought were my favorite moves, and I went straight to Bobby Wagner coming back because I understand it's a 1-year deal. But if you look at the impact he had on not just the defense last year, both sides of the ball, the whole team, the coaches, everything, the importance of bringing him back because he could teach guys one more year and then this thing is ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. You think about the season last year when they went through the losing streak. I don't know if it was 3 or 4 games. I can't remember how many games it was. But it was Bobby, as you remember, when he addressed the media after one of the losses, and he was like, hey, we're going to turn this thing around. And sure enough, he was not just an excellent player from on the football team, but the presence, the leadership, the sounding voice, the guy who kept guys focused and understand the task at hand, that you're going to have some ebbs and flows, some highs and lows that take place during the season. So re-signing him was a major importance from my standpoint as well. I thought it was a no-brainer. I didn't think there was any way that they would let him out of the building and not bring him back because of the productivity on the football field, but also what he brought to the locker room, in the meeting room, and also just his presence and his winning pedigree.
Yeah, I'm with you, Fletch. I thought Ertz and Bobby were definitely coming back. Sure enough, they end up coming back. And I remember, I want to say it was after the Cowboys lost at home, that third straight loss, and nobody really knocked them for losing to the Steelers or the Eagles, but it was then the loss to Dallas at home. People are like, oh my God, what's happening? The sky is falling. And he was just like, this is football. These are long seasons. And I wonder, I mean, for both of you guys that played in the league a long time, how important is it for young guys, maybe even a guy like Jaden Daniels that seems totally unflappable, but to hear that in that moment from within your locker room?
It's extremely important because especially when you look at the season and at one point the team was riding on a high and everybody's patting them on the back, and then you go through that 3-game losing streak and the criticism all of a sudden starts to come in, and the national media, the local media, they're saying, all right, well, this is the team that we thought they would be coming into the season. And for these young guys who don't understand that this is a long season and you're going to have those ebbs and flows, highs and lows, you have to be able to focus week in and week out, day in and day out, regardless of how the season's going, whether you're on a 5-game winning streak or a 3-game losing streak. You have to come in there with the same mindset each and every week, ready to work, not let the outside noise, whether it's good or bad, determine how you're going to play, determine how you're going to approach your craft. So having a guy like Bobby, having a Zach Hurst, some guys who have been to the mountaintop, who have experienced winning the Super Bowl, having those type of guys, because one thing to hear from a coach, but when you have a teammate and guys in that locker room, well-respected guys in that locker room, that can constantly emphasize that message, it goes a long way.
But they seem to be getting bigger defensive tackles. I'm talking about guys 6'5", 320, things like that, 330, 6'3", 330. How important is that, the size, but also the ability for guys to protect linebackers?
It's important, but also, you know, scheme. That depends on the scheme, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the standpoint of are you asking your defense alignment to eat blocks, so to speak, or are you asking to be better penetrators? I will say this. You have to have defensive linemen that the offensive line and the offensive coaches respect and feel like, hey, we have to get this guy blocked. If we don't get him blocked, he's going to game wreck. You think about the Philadelphia Eagles and a guy like Jalen Carter, and also Milton Williams, who's no longer there. Those guys were game wreckers for the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Kansas City Chiefs knew that. We knew that, and how much they created havoc on our offense. But just from the standpoint, when you look at what was the real weak link of this defense of a year ago, stopping a run.
Yeah.
We love the sacks, and we love, hey, you know, getting interceptions. But it's hard to rush the passer in third and one, third and two. You ain't putting your ear back to rush the quarterback. You got to get him in some third and sixes, third and seven, third and eight pluses in order to be able to rush the quarterback. And how do you do that? You have to be able to stop the run. And we just weren't stout enough in the trenches, especially in the interior defensive line. There were times where we allowed too much penetration, especially if it was a double team block, things like that, where quite frankly, the defensive tackles at times were in the linebacker's lap, and I don't give a damn who you got back there, who you got playing linebacker. It's hard to make a tackle with an offensive lineman in your lap, yeah, and a defensive lineman in your lap. And it's not a knock on anybody. It's just, hey, they understood it. That's why they went out and they addressed it. So I'm not saying anything that they didn't see. And when you look at who are we competing against, first and foremost, we're competing with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Definitely.
They have a massive offensive line. Saquon Barkley is a problem. He's problem number one. You cannot achieve your goal as a team, as a defense, allowing, you know, I think we were 30th, 31st, whatever we were, stopping a run. That lower, bottom third, probably bottom five in the league and stopping a run. You cannot, that's not sustainable. We have to get better at stopping a run so we can earn the right to rush the passer, which will allow us to get off the field, to create more turnovers, to get the ball back to Jaden and that offense.
Absolutely. I'm curious, specifically on Javon Kinlaw, what you think of his game and how he helps them. There's talk of him maybe even kind of playing the edge more in Washington with that size. Would be pretty remarkable.
I love the size, 6'5". I really liked him when he came out of college, just studying him when he came out of college. I was working for CBS Sports back then, and we were doing, like, mock stuff, and, you know, he looked at him. Adam Peters knows him. Daryl Tapp knows him. Daryl Tapp was a defensive line coach, so they have intimate knowledge of him. And the thing that kills me, man, you hear our fan base and critics saying, hey, we spent too much money over him. These guys know what they're doing. They didn't pay him $15 million a year because they were bidding against themselves. They paid him $15 million a year because that's what they had to pay him. Trust me, somebody else is going to pay him some money. And these teams talk, and these organizations talk. I think back to when I was a free agent and came to Washington, and Joe Gibbs and Detroit Lions were recruiting me, and also Washington. And you know, my agent was negotiating with Washington, and Coach Gibbs called Detroit with Matt Millen at that time. I think he was your former teammate, and say, hey, are you going to pay London? And Matt Miller said, hell yeah, we're going to pay London. So they talk. These organizations talk.
Yeah.
They got friends on different staff. So they didn't pay him $15 million per year out of the talents of their heart. They had paid him that type of money because that's what they had to pay him. And he's going to be a good football player for them. Love the size. Heavy-handed guy. Can provide some pass rushing interior. But you look at where we struggled last season, it was in the interior,
stopping a run.
You got a guy who can do that, but also provide some pass rush as well.
Yep,
I'm with you.
I'm glad you said it, though. Coaches, like people it's more talking. And the thing about it is this: the GMs and all have more information than we have. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have done
right.
that. Well, they know what they have to pay. We are assuming they know.
I totally agree.
Exactly. And correct me if I'm not wrong. Didn't Adam Peters put together a roster that got us to the NFC Championship a year ago?
Yeah.
I think the guy knows what he's doing. Him and his staff, they know what they're doing, man. It has just amazed me. Oh, you know, you're going to trust him on one thing, but then, he overpaid for Larry McTusker. You're not getting a damn left tackle in this, a starting left tackle of his caliber without paying. Unless it's a Trick Williams type of situation, that just does not happen. You got to pay for talent. Talent cost. And having that blind side of Jaden Daniels shored up and being able to say, hey, we got a left tackle that's going to, we don't have to worry about it. And, and that allows them to move Brandon Comer wherever he's going to be. I think he'll be outstanding guard if he ends up there. That's gonna make us a lot better football team.
Yep.
I think with Tunsil, that move is so significant, but we live in a world where people kind of only pay attention to skill positions. The Tunsil, how much do you think that impacts the entire offensive line? You're probably moving Coleman to right tackle. Wiley's probably your day one right guard while Cosme recovers from the knee injury. I mean, how much better as a group is that, especially once Cosme comes back?
I think it's significantly better. And, you know, I think you added, by adding Tunsil, you added two starters to the offensive line. Now you have the flexibility of whether you want to put Brandon Coleman at right guard, you want to have him at right tackle. Right guard, right tackle, or left guard. You know, Biotis, he's solid at the center. Nick Allegretti, what do you do with him? So they have versatility. I'm going to trust them to they have a plan of where they want those guys to go. And once Sam comes back, you'll have another guy. You can never have too many offensive linemen.
Not at all.
The depth of that unit, because guys get hurt, they get banged up. You got Wiley, who can play guard, who can play tackle. So it just creates a lot more flexibility, a lot more depth. But I think ultimately, if they end up putting Coleman at a guard and left guard, and maybe Allegretti can play, he can play right guard. I think he was a swing guy when he's with the Chiefs.
Yep.
That just makes that offensive line so much better.
Yep.
Until Sam Cosme comes back.
I say get the best five on the field.
Wiley, Allegretti, and even Coleman. Now Coleman's was at the college level, but they have a lot of versatility if you depending what you need. And over the course of 17 games, man, there's going to be nights where there's going to be days where, oh man, that lineman can't go today. Luckily, we can move this dude here and then plug this guy in there. The two other guys,
and you put more, you get more size in the interior. And I'm just so assuming if Coleman ends up in a guard position, you get bigger in the interior.
Yep. Two other dudes I wanted to ask you about. Will Harris, they signed yesterday. What's remarkable about fans is 2 years ago, everybody freaked out when they lost Curl. Nobody was excited about Chin. 1 year later, everybody's freaked out they lose Chin. Now they've signed Will Harris. I remember the Saints game we all went down and worked in December. He had a couple licks in that game on Commanders wideouts. What do you think of Harris, Fletch?
Yeah, I don't know a ton about him, but I've obviously seen some of his hits that have been, you know, circulating through the internet since we signed him. You got him for half the cost of what Jeremy Chin would have cost him, and you know, a guy who he's played corner, he's played safety, he's played the slot, he's been in the box at times, so another guy who can do a lot of different things. They understand the role that they want that position to play, and they feel like Will Harris is a guy that can do that for them. So, you know, they know what they're doing again. This free agent, look at the free agents they signed a year ago. Jeremy Chin being one of them. Frankie Louvu, who came out and played outstanding. You know, not household names, so to speak, to a lot of different people. But these coaches, they know what they're doing. These the front office people, they know what they're doing. So I'm gonna trust them, and I'm excited to see these guys take the grass when the time comes.
Last one for me, because this is a different body style than they have had. Eddie Goldman is just a house of a dude. Goldman played, he only played probably like 35% of the snaps last year for Atlanta, but was healthy in all 17 games. What do you think bringing in a guy with true like nose tackle size does? Maybe it's short yardage. I don't know how they plan on deploying him, but that one caught my eye.
JP, what do you mean how they plan on this deploying? Going to be a run stopper.
I thought he might be a character.
We struggle stopping the run. He's a zero. He probably can play some one, and maybe if he has to play some three, depending on like the offensive line. I mean, the tight end shifting to, you know, to from one side to another side. But he's a run stopper. He's a guy more than anything, he has size, and he's going to be stout in the middle of that defense. You cannot allow teams to just run the ball at will against you. So that was one of the issues. They identified that. That's why he was a guy that they signed in free agency.
There you go. Hey, London, I'm guessing you just got to the golf course. I hear your car door opening. So we'll let you go.
It's 80 degrees in Charlotte.
Oh, man.
We got about 70, 68, 70.
Today's kind of cold. We've gotten there this week, though.
Yeah.
Enjoy, man. Hit them straight. Thank you for making time for us.
All right, Fletch. Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Josh.
Bro.
That's our guy, London Fletcher. You can follow him at LFletcher59, one of the greats for the Burgundy and Gold at the linebacker position. Appreciate his. I'm not so sure about the vibes in Dallas, B.
Well, what happens sometimes is you get one person who likes to comment on everything. And when people are on that team with that said person, they don't normally respond because he is probably like one of the better players and people just listen to him all the time and you don't want to get into a battle with him. But once you leave, you can voice your opinion. And basically, Lawrence is telling Micah what he feels. You do less of your second jobs and more of your first job. We ain't got no problem.
So everybody understands DeMarcus Lawrence signed with Seattle. I thought DeMarcus Lawrence would have made a lot of sense here. He's not here. He's in Seattle. He's in the other Washington.
Yeah.
And in, I think it was some in-house Seahawks media, he did an interview with a dude and said, you know, Dallas is my home. Because he's talked about part of the reason he wanted to stay there is his family's there. They're established, whatever. He said, Dallas is my home, but I know for sure I'm not going to win a Super Bowl there. Now, I will add parenthetically, I'm not sure you will with this version of the Seahawks, but whatever.
Well, he could have been just saying that because he's gone from Dallas now.
Yeah. Regardless, he took a shot. He took a little shot, and that's okay. You're entitled to do that. Micah Parsons quote tweeted that and said, this what rejection and envy looks like. This is some clown bleep with a clown emoji. Well, Tank Lawrence doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that is a punk about his bleep. And Tank Lawrence responded, calling me a clown won't change the fact that I told the truth. Maybe if you spent less time tweeting and more time winning, I wouldn't have left.
Huh.
I think Tank Lawrence wins that sparring session. And B, we've now heard from a few different people that, like, Micah needs to chill. Somebody said the podcast, he's talking about tweeting.
He probably was referring to the podcast stuff as well.
Right.
I just think that while you're playing, it's difficult to juggle that. And I did media while I was playing, but I also knew how I told you how I would do stuff. If somebody had an awful game, I'm going and talk to them to get their opinion. So when I know that the co-host will ask me a question about that person and I answer with their words, you still have to understand you're teammates with guys. But Micah is going to make an opinionated thing about everybody on his team, in the league, and everything else. While you're playing, that's a little dangerous.
Yeah, man. Like, even last week when Washington traded for Tunsil, he quote tweeted Adam Schefter and said, WTF, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, of his own. Now, this one I can kind of get because it was his teammate going to play with the Giants. Chauncey Golston, he had a comment on. Like, this I find fascinating. So, Clarence Hill is an institution in Dallas, has covered the Cowboys forever. Schefter tweeted out, more moves in San Fran, Niners are releasing Leonard Floyd. Clarence Hill quote tweeted and said, 49ers are gutting themselves, which they really are. To which Parsons replied, no more rookie quarterback, LOL, welcome to reality. And he's not wrong in that.
He's not wrong, but he should not have an opinion about everything. If you are getting ready for the Dallas Cowboys to play a football season, why the hell are you, commenting on everybody's tweets? If I'm a part of his team, of the front office, I'm like, yo, I need you to back off a little bit, please. Because you're quoting everything or commenting on everything that's said, when the hell are you looking at your stuff?
Exactly, dude. Like, there is plenty of time in the day on the planet to fire off some tweets. Like, I get it. I just, at some point, you don't need to, like, if you were commenting on people just tweet wacky stuff, or he loves golf and he's tweeting about Rory taking this kid's phone or something, you know what I mean? Like, okay. But to comment on the business of football from your club and other clubs just seems like a lot, man.
Yeah. I mean, listen, he has a right to do what he wants to do, but people also have a right to question him. And question the dude is outstanding talent. But as I say over and over again, you have to be, he does it, and he does his first job very good. But when you are a person of his ilk, his level, you got to make your team better with you. They didn't win a lot last year. So stop worrying about what's going on everywhere else and try to get your stuff together. The way teams get better sometimes, they go internally. They start, they kind of disappear from the public. And then they come out balling because they all focus on one common goal, not commenting on everybody else's ish.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Listen, man, I've made plenty of fun of Mike McCarthy, but he was a pro coach. I mean, he had won a Super Bowl. He dealt with Aaron Rodgers a long time. In hindsight, we may all learn that dealing with Rodgers was, you know, that McCarthy, looking back at that divorce, maybe McCarthy wasn't the problem. You know what I'm saying? But regardless, I think as we kind of like get further away from this, McCarthy and that Dallas team, for better or worse, were pretty good. They won a lot of games.
Yeah, they were.
Now you've got – you still got Dak. You still got CD. Like, I can see a lot of it. But now you got Brian Schottenheimer running this thing, and it sure seems like Micah Parsons – if Micah Parsons is emboldened right now, how's that going to look when he gets 200 mil?
Huh.
You know what I'm saying?
You won't be able to shut him up then. And man, I just feel you have that right, but sometimes just because you have a right don't mean you have to do it.
Totally. You know,
like I think every time that like, people go, oh man, it's legal, nothing wrong with it. Yeah, it might be legal, nothing wrong with it, but it may not be for you. Just because something is legal don't mean you got to indulge in it or try it.
Right.
Because you may not be able to, you may be the one that can't handle it, which is going to make it a detriment to you. So just because he has the right to comment all the time, he might want to back off of it some.
Bro, Jeff, I don't ask you this to put you on blast, okay? But there have been times when I think Jeff unfairly on social media probably catches more heat because B and I bust your chops a fair amount. But, like, we're also your friends, and we have real conversations, and we know what you're trying to accomplish in life. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot more to it, where sometimes you'll just catch heat on social media. And there have been various times, Jeffrey, where you've asked, like, yo, JP, you think I should say this? And I'm like, no. But you can, but you at least know to ask the question if you should. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair.
So the question I would ask is, who is the person that Michael Parsons ask for guidance or information, who's the person he would go to for that? Or does he think nobody could tell him anything?
I don't know, B. And it's one of the great, truly one of the best questions I've ever heard asked in a press conference. And it should be no surprise that it came from David Aldridge, a Hall of Famer. And I believe it was Terry McLaurin. And DA said, who in your life is your truth teller? Who do you count on to tell you the truth? And the truth is not always pleasant.
100%.
And like, if you, like, for me, between my wife and working with Brian Mitchell, like, I'm going to be told the truth.
I subscribe to that.
Right. Whether or not I want to hear it, I'm going to hear it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it comes from a place of love, though.
I know. And dude, in a lot of ways, I think that's what Pete Carroll was about. That's what DQ is about. I think that's what Adam Peters is about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's evidence of it, honestly, with John Allen. I mean, let's be real with Allen. On some level, I'm not, let me be clear before some aggregator says I'm reporting this. I'm not reporting anything, okay? But on some level, I know there was a conversation between Allen and his representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, we're going into the last year. We don't have any guaranteed money on this thing. Let's talk. And on some level, that conversation was, yeah, man, I don't think that's going to work. Like, that was some truth, right? And then what exact words were said and what the exact order of the words were may vary. But, like, ultimately, Allen was going into the last year of a deal with no guaranteed money, and he wasn't going to play on that. And Washington knew they weren't going to give him any guarantees, and they knew there was a divorce coming. And so what do? They handled it the right way. Hey, you can talk, see if you can get a trade going. If not, we're going to release you, let you hit the market in time to take advantage of the market.
Yeah.
That's harsh. That's business, but it's reality.
It's true.
And you're better off in that world.
Yeah. I'd much rather a person tell me straight up what they feel about me than lie to me and then tell somebody else what they think and then another person come and tell it to me. Because at that point, I'm not going to like you anymore, but I won't respect you for sure. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
So when my dad always said, don't try to live life to be liked, because people may not like you. So you sitting up there trying to sugarcoat something for somebody and you know you're lying and then they find out the truth, they don't respect you. As long as they respect you, that's all that matters. So I don't give a damn if you go have a dinner with me or have a drink with me, but you know one thing, you're not going to come at me wrong because you know what I'm about.
Speaking of the truth, Brian.
Yeah.
Speaking of what's important, telling the truth, even when it's inconvenient or perhaps harsh, Myles Garrett had a press conference in Cleveland. Now, you remember it was Super Bowl week. So that was only 6 weeks ago, maybe about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
When Myles Garrett said, yo, I want to win. I need out of Cleveland. I'm never going to win a Super Bowl here. My focus is winning.
Uh-huh. Well, he did win. Yeah.
You know, things have obviously changed for Miles. He stayed in Cleveland. He got, $160 million guaranteed, I believe.
He won.
Miles Garrett was asked about remaining with the Browns, B. I think the fans will see my heart is in the right place. It's never been about money. It's always been about winning.
Yeah, but you just said you couldn't win there. The only thing that has changed is the money. And let's be real, bro. I'm not mad at you. But that's why I say to people sometimes, don't say stuff that you give people a way to come back at you. If he just said, listen, I just think I want to try somewhere else, that's better than saying I can't win a Super Bowl here. Then they give you money. Now you feel like you can win a Super Bowl there. You know, just be careful what you say when you're speaking things, because that will come back to haunt you.
There's some irony in certainly me, less so you, because you're less prone to fly off the handle like I am. There's some great irony in two people that basically speak for a living, in you and I at this point, telling people to speak less and not necessarily speak all the time. But,
no, but it's your job to speak.
Right.
Michael Parsons is a professional athlete. His job is to play football.
Right.
And, yes, he picked up this other stuff because of what? Professional athletics. So he could do a lot of other things, but when those other things start becoming more prominent than your original thing or start pulling you away from your original thing, that could be a problem. Barstool Nate, we just been talking about 6'3" or higher receivers, and Nate don't fit the bill, but we're going to talk to him anyway. What's up, Nate? How you doing, brother?
Yeah, I chose not to be a wide receiver. You know that, but I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well, man. How you feeling? Other than
great. I think yesterday was a very good day.
Other than fooling yourself about thinking that you're 6'3".
No. We're the same height, B-Mitch. You know that. We're
dude,
both
I look down on you. I eat soup off your head.
That's a good lie.
Because all you can eat is soup because you lost all your teeth.
That's funny, dog.
Our friend Eric Nathan, Barstool Sports. You can give him a follow at Barstool Nate.
Let's talk about this, Nate Dogg. One day in, barely 24 hours into the tampering period, Washington, everybody said, you got to get better in the trenches. Well, their first two moves are to sign a defensive lineman and to trade for possibly the best pass-blocking left tackle in the league, if not a top three, top five left tackle in the league. How do you feel about the first 24 hours?
It's fantastic. It is quite a wonderful time to be a fan of this team. And I'll say why I like it. We have one of the best quarterbacks, a top five quarterback in the league, on a rookie contract right now, which means you can go out and make moves and spend money because, as we know, the quarterback is the most important position in the NFL. And if you have one of those guys on a cheap contract, it becomes almost like a win now type of scenario, win in the next 3 to 4 years type of scenario. So you surround that stud quarterback on the rookie contract with as good of players as you can find and you can bring in and pay. And that is exactly what Adam Peters is doing. I love what he's doing. He sees the vision. He understands it. He made the in-season trade for a corner. He went out and got Debo. He went out and got the stud left tackle and Laremy Tunsil. I think he's doing an excellent job. I think he's putting the Commanders exactly where we need to be to challenge the Eagles next season and beyond. I could not be happier with what is happening in Washington right now.
I think folks need to recalibrate their understanding. Like, the best players don't get to free agency. NFL teams have gotten smarter about that.
Right.
Because of the non-guaranteed nature of contracts, you don't have, you know, in baseball, there's like two worlds, right?
Yeah.
There are baseball players not repped by Scott Boras.
And know that.
Who's probably like, that's probably 75, 80% of the league. Maybe even more. Maybe it's 85, 90. But of the best players in baseball, it seems like half of them are repped by Boras.
Mm-hmm.
So of the best players in baseball, half of them sign extensions early because they want to get paid. The rest of them are Boras, and they dictate the terms of the entire sport. Football doesn't have that. So most football players are going to sign extensions. Quarterbacks do it all the time. And you add that with the franchise tag, most of these guys don't get to free agency.
Nope, they don't.
And generally, drafting really well is the best path. And then you draft really well and you supplement it with trades is kind of the look at how Philly does it.
Yep. Yep. And I think trading is becoming more common in the NFL now. I feel like growing up, there was never a single trade in the NFL.
Rare.
It's becoming more common.
Yeah.
And I like that Adam Peters sees what he needs. He understands the business better than anybody. He understands the value of draft picks compared to getting, as you said, a top three pass blocking tackle in the league to protect Jaden Daniels' blindside. And he, you know, I see some people saying, oh, the Texans fleeced us this or that. I disagree because you can't really put a price on having that guy protecting Jaden Daniels in year two, bringing in a wide receiver to complement Terry. It's all coming together like a painting, like just the strokes of the brush and the colors are all combining to make one fantastic, just gallery portrait that Adam Peters is painting in Washington. And I think if you really sit back and look at it, you don't care about that third round or sixth round draft pick because you need that guy to protect the blind side more than you need that sixth round pick.
What else, what other moves are you expecting or you think should happen?
Well, we need a safety. We lost Jeremy Chinn. I think a lot of people are bummed out about that. Understandably so. I think a lot of people expected him to stay in Washington and he didn't. And now we are very weak in the secondary, specifically the safety position. I don't know if that will be addressed through the draft. If Peters has his eye on a guy that he thinks will be there at the end of the first round or the second round. Or, you know, there's a diamond in the rough waiting out there. But I think, you know, shoring up that safety position is important and maybe another defensive tackle. And then someone, if it's not going to be Fowler, someone to come off the edge. I think Fowler had a good season rushing the passer. I think a lot of people were disappointed in his run defense. But, you know, 11 sacks or whatever isn't easy to find out there in the NFL. I think he wants a bigger bag than Washington wants to give him, but maybe they can meet halfway. I'm not sure what happens there. But, yeah, maybe a guy to get to the quarterback and a safety is next on my list.
I don't hate you with the safety thing. It's kind of interesting. There are options. I would say Justin Reed's still floating around from the Chiefs. I've always liked Justin Simmons with the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Just seems like a playmaker. I think, you know, obviously yesterday the Tunsil trade is a really, really big deal. And I think I won't be shocked if AP kind of waits a little bit now and sees where the value starts to lie. I've talked about it. I think Tank Lawrence, if you believe he's healthy, makes a lot of sense. They really needed somebody that could help them set the edge in the run game. He's fantastic at that, and he's a good pass rusher. Veteran, by all accounts, everybody loves that dude. Dallas's cap situation, they just paid Osa. Dak restructured, CD restructured, presumably all that's to get a Parsons deal done. If you get a Parsons deal done, I don't see how you can pay Tank Lawrence also. So that's one that I find interesting. I think, though, Nate, you've hit on the right tone of this thing, that the Kinlaw signing, I think, has generated more reaction from Commanders fans. I think fans are fired up about Tunsil. The Kinlaw thing, a lot of people look at PFF grades, or, you know, there were times you watch the Jets, he gets stood up and pushed off the line of scrimmage. At some point, where do you balance your reaction, your understanding, your ability to ascertain information surrounding the NFL with just AP and DQ clearly have a vision for this dude? It's the first guy they identified. I'm going to roll with that.
I saw people hating the Kinlaw signing. I'll be honest, I didn't watch enough Jets games last year to give him my Barcelona official grade. But when I look at him, he's a ginormous human being to clog the middle. He's still only 27 years old. He was a first-round pick in 2020 by the Niners. And there's that old saying that we say in the NFL circles, you can never judge a player by his tenure on the Jets. You just can't. You stop when you're on the Jets, you give up by week six. Like there's he got pushed off the ball because he was already thinking about his dinner reservation that he had after the Jets were going to lose another game by 40. So I think people also see the big numbers and they go, oh, over. I think every reply to every signing yesterday was overpaid. I don't think people understand the cap goes up every year, and so contracts get bigger every year. I think Adam Peters knows what he's doing with this signing. I don't think he was an overpay. If you can get a 6'5", 320-pound monster to clog the middle, you've got to do it after you lose both of your defensive tackles. I'm perfectly okay with this signing.
I agree with that. I think people kind of sleep on the cap going up also, so there's just more money out there.
Every year. It's every year people freak out about just the pure numbers and don't even think that the cap went up 15%, you know?
Yeah, they have to just understand that professional football players and professional athletes make way more money than we make.
So they make a lot.
When you see those numbers, you can't judge it according to what you're used to seeing. That is the going rate in the NFL.
How much did you make, BMH? What was your biggest deal?
5 years, 10 mil.
That's not bad.
I'd take it. If anybody's offering that to me, please know that I will take it. Nate, looking ahead here, dude, are you...
I'm sure somebody think I was overpaid.
I bet they did. I bet they yelled it then too. Anybody sad to see go? Think is a bigger loss. Deami Brown comes to mind. You mentioned Chin already. You dubbed Deami Brown Mr. January.
Deami Brown was the bane of my existence until two games in the playoffs where he balled out and then he was bad again. He turned back into a pumpkin. I don't think he will be missed in the wide receiver room. I don't like how he acted after the season, acting like he deserved a ginormous contract. He did not improve.
I don't think that's fair. Tenure. I was there for his press conference. I would not say he acted like he deserved a ginormous contract.
I saw everything he said, and I think he overvalued himself, and he got a one-year prove-it deal in Jacksonville, and I do not think he's going to prove it. I will not miss him. I think he's easily replaceable. I think Jeremy Chinn is the obvious big loss from yesterday. I think two-factor. One, again, our depth at safety is non-existent. And two, I think most people expected him to stay. So that was a bit of a bummer. Besides that, we'll see how stuff shakes out, especially through the draft. If a new running back comes in and a running back leaves, we still need a backup quarterback. I would like Mariota to come back. It seems like nobody had a bad thing to say about him, especially in the mentor role for Jaden. Jaden and him seem to get along great and help each other out a lot. So I think that, you know, I think Mariota might command a little more money than people want to pay a backup. But that could be one of those worth it type of deals where you want to keep everything in the quarterback room the same for Jaden. So we'll see what happens there. Besides that, I think everything, you know, is going smoothly.
I think it is too. And I think folks are just, I don't understand. It seems like fans are so uneasy, but at the same time, nobody knew. Like, it's 24 hours into this thing and folks are freaking out about the lack of this or the lack of that.
They have to realize the roster is not final yet. You don't end it on the first 2 days of, legal tampering period. You got more time to build this thing.
And Beamish, during the season, trade is for Lattimore, who makes the cornerbacks better. So I know it's not a free agent signing, but it's not like Peters is sitting on his thumb. He's out there making moves, making trades, making stuff happen. This team still has plenty of cap space to make another move. As JP said, when, you know, the things kind of settle down and you see who's still out there, I think there'll be plenty of value. And then we have a draft. And who knows if we're going to trade back and collect more picks or what's going to happen in the draft. But I think for the most part, every position is going to be at least as good, if not better, than last season. And there's still plenty of time to go. We're March 11th. We have 6 months until we actually need to have a roster settled. So I'm not worried about anything. Oh, and Tressway coming back. I think that's huge as well. Obviously.
People's punter.
Yeah.
The people's punter.
I agree. What do you think about Ertz and Wagner? I don't know if we talked, but I that was expected, but I still think important.
Ertz, I was a little harsh on at the beginning of the season. I think he got better and improved and became a very good safety blanket for Jaden, especially as the season went on. I still think we badly need a tight end too. I don't think John Bates is that guy. Sennett was weird how he was a second round pick and really never saw the field. And that was concerning to me. I know he was just a rookie, but, you know, he was the 53rd overall pick, and he had 5 catches the entire season. And not just that, didn't get on the field whatsoever in any capacity. I don't know. I think Dan Quinn was very vague about what was happening there. I would really just love to know the answer to that mystery. Like, what was happening there? Why didn't he ever get any chances, any opportunities? And is he the tight end two of the future? Or is he just
brought everybody back?
The guy, you know? So if he's not the guy to, you know, take over for Ertz or be another option on the field, we badly need another tight end. I think a double tight end set would just be another layer on this offense that could help a lot. And then, you know, I think we need another receiver. You know, we have Debo and Terry. After that, we bring back Jameson. We're bringing back Luke McCaffrey. I don't know what OZ's status is going to be, what Noah Brown's status is going to be. So I would love to just get another slot receiver who has sure hands and can pick up first downs.
I may be alone on this one, but I like the idea of Cooper Kupp 1 year incentive-based.
I don't hate it. Yep, I think Kupp can still play. Injuries aside, maybe he got the injuries out of the way. 31 years old, good hands. Could come on the cheap-ish for how productive he's been in his career. So, yeah, I'm with you, JP. Throw a ton of incentives at him. See what he can do. Low-risk, high-reward type of guy.
So I just said this. B, I'm curious what you say on the Cup thing. I was just talking to CK, the cluster buster in the men's room, just, you know, how we operate around here. And I was saying the Cup thing, and he's like, if you sign a guy like Cup, what does that say about Luke McCaffrey? I don't necessarily know that it says any one thing or the other, but Brian, how worried are you about at some point perhaps like stunting Luke's development?
No, listen to me. I'm trying to build a football team. I'm not worried about stunting nobody's growth. Those guys have to realize right now this is no longer college. This is the pros. You're a professional. You come back better than what you were when you left. If you don't, it's not up to the coach to build you. And I think that's the whole thing right there. So I'm a little more harsh when it comes down to that than most people. I went through it.
Luke also strikes me as that kind of dude.
Yeah, well, his family is that type of dude. You think his
old man's not working every day?
Yeah, he should be. And I think the whole thing about that is, listen, man, if you feel Cooper will help or anybody you bring in will help, you bring him in.
I'll say this about Cooper Kupp. Last three seasons, 9 games, 12 games, 12 games, still way more productive in those games than most players are for a full season. 9 games, 812 receiving yards, 12 games, 737, 12 games, 710.
So each of his last three seasons would be the second most productive receiver in Washington last year.
Absolutely, 100%. And for Luke McCaffrey, I don't think it stunts his growth. I think it gives him another guy to compete with, another guy to say, I have to get better than. Luke McCaffrey has played wide receiver for all of 2 years of his life now. So, I mean, he had 18 catches as a rookie, barely having any experience at the position. He's, you know, he's still 6'2", 200 pounds. He has a good body, good frame. You know, he looked good in, you know, little pieces. But he's 20-whatever years old, 22 years old. He's not ready quite yet to be that guy. Cooper Kupp has proven he is that guy. And Cooper Kupp stays healthy, you have a 100-reception guy. You know, he's really good. I would love to take a flyer on him.
I tend to be on that side. West Coast Swing coming for the Caps. Do we have an official OV record-breaking prediction from you, Nate?
Oh, what game you mean?
Yeah.
So 9 more. We're on the West Coast now. You know, Ducks tonight, Kings on Thursday, Sharks on Saturday. Then back home for 3 straight. It would be crazy if he did it during one of those games. You know, watch him. He could go off for a hat trick in San Jose, be 6 away. You know, like he's just that kind of monster right now, scoring at that type of clip where it could be anywhere from, you know, March 22nd to April 10th. It could be any game in there. It's so hard because he's so good and the Caps are so good that we're going to get so many empty net opportunities.
That empty netter the other day, it's unfair to call that an empty netter.
Yeah,
like the degree of difficulty to hit the backhand spinner off the board and drill it.
I don't care if it's an empty netter or not. Why was it an empty net? Because you were beating that team and they had to get an extra guy. They got the goalie out of it. It's a part of the game.
Right.
So your score is no less in my book.
It was
my official prediction is March 30th at home against the Sabres. It's a 3 p.m. game. I will be there. If it's not that game
in our pool.
If it's not that game, I will be taking the Amtrak up to Boston for the April 1st game. That's in the game. Boston. Then we will be hopping a flight down to Raleigh for that April 2nd game. Then hopping a flight to DCA for the April 4th game in DC against the Blackhawks. Like,
that's a lot of travel that I don't actually expect you to do.
He's not gonna do it.
I will be in the arena for the record breaker, no matter what.
Wow, Nate, letting the world know right there. All right, we're gonna hold you to that, buddy.
Hold me to like a 70%.
That's when I give B a firm maybe. Hey, you want to do this? Firm, maybe. He knows JP ain't coming.
He ain't coming. Like Nate not going to those games he's talking about.
Thank you, Nate, dog. Appreciate you moving times. It worked out great.
Appreciate you guys. See you soon.
All right. That's our boy, Barstool Nate. Give him a follow at Barstool Nate. Of course, he joins us via the Rude guest hotline. Rude is the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV.